Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Rowdy Buddhist. Apologize for the delay in making some new podcasts. I've been studying very hard for my Master of Divinity so that I can be able to hopefully share additional information as a chaplain. Today, I'd like to speak on a very important aspect as we go into another deeper understanding in our practice of dhyana, the understanding and idea of hindrances and problems, because as we practice, this is something that we all will run into. And in actually doing meditation, it allows us the actual experience that we can build upon in order to understand, observe, witness. And in, as it says in Buddhism, to be able to, as with medicine, to ease or lessen the complications in our mind that direct us towards suffering. So all the mental skills that are needed in meditation are innate abilities. They're in us. And we can selectively choose to cultivate them. That is why we practice. It's no different from acquiring any new skill or any new understanding, whether it's learning science, learning a new musical instrument, or how to do a particular sport. We're just actually training ourselves in a way that favors certain inherent abilities over others. Think of meditation as a mental training that exercises certain mental muscles so they respond more easily and better serve our needs. As I stated today in meditation, my teacher, Tsukamoto Shonin, drew a circle one time, which I'm a very visual person, so that assisted me quite immeasurably. He drew in that and he asked me, well, what is your biggest hindrance? Your biggest challenge. And, you know, so he drew that as the biggest circle. You write that in there, and then also you start to write the other aspects as you explore and, gain insight into your character, how you react, as to what is your baseline, as they would say. Reaction or behavior, such as, is your baseline anger? Is it aversion? Is it blaming? Is it fear, etc.? And as you wrote that in the circle, you also wrote the Buddha nature, or what you thought. Usually it's quite small, especially people who are suffering, they cannot see it. But it's there. That is the basic belief concept in Buddhism, right? And it was interesting because he simply said, if we are able to reduce the size, they don't disappear, as the Buddhism says. The skandhas, the mental images, the aversions that we have, the challenges, they don't disappear, but they lessen. And as they lessen, our Buddha nature becomes more clear. So therefore, we experientially understand Buddhism, experientially understand our original nature. Whereas most people might be resolved to think that their original nature are these issues, are these emotions. But just as mental capacities develop and are used in meditation, they are completely natural and normal. There are activities of mind that can hinder or even defeat our practice. In traditional meditation, in the many teachings, it identifies in Buddhism 5 specific hindrances to overcome before we can be able to make real progress. But I would think that there is actually progress in that. Because first identifying, seeing, acknowledging without judgment, but that providing the remedy, the medicine, we are able to come to terms with these aspects, allowing us to go deeper into dhyana. And through this understanding, we can gain invaluable awareness of ourselves. In daily life, these so-called hindrances that we may have actually serve and are necessary and useful and have a purpose. Hence, that is the reason why in Buddhism, we do not disregard our original natures. We have the example and model of the 10 worlds from hell to the Buddha. As we go above, we see the realms of desire, the realms of animality, instinct. But we don't deny them. But with the concept of Ichinen, Sanzen, 3,000 existences in a single moment or thought, each of those realms, including the realm of instinct or desire, contain the other 9. So therefore, in each of those realms, the Buddha is present. And once you become familiar with them and how they work, it becomes obvious to us that neither suppression nor self-punishment will help us in changing or overcoming these ideas. On the other hand, positive reinforcement, as we grow our mind, widen our mind, we see there are other options. So this positive reinforcement of other natural tendencies of mind, such as concentration, dhyana, that neutralizes these hindrances, works very well. Many people may say the word oppose, but actually neutralizes, such as good medicine. Just remember, in your practice, everyone faces these challenges. Even on a daily basis, professional, long-term meditators. These are not unique to you, and they are not personal shortcomings. All of the instinct, all of the reaction we have in our mind is there for a purpose. But yet, as the Buddha has shown us through his life, through practice and study, we are able to gain the realization and quiescent nature that allows us to remove ourselves from the samsara, the turning, the spinning, the confusion into mindfulness and awareness. Most importantly, and very fortunately for us people, for us beings, these hindrances are well understood, and there are many effective methods for resolving each one of them and understanding each one of them in wisdom. And I use the word wisdom because if you hear me say that, just a quick interjection, information is different than wisdom. Information is something we collect, we read, we remember. But the wisdom is when we can use such information effectively and properly within the context of our lives. The 5 hindrances, as we begin to talk about, we can trace almost every problem in meditation to one or more of these 5 innate and universal psychological predispositions known as the 5 hindrances. There are many different ways of organizing and translating. But for here, we'll use worldly desire, aversion, laziness and lethargy, agitation due to worry and remorse, and doubt. They're referred to in Buddhism as hindrances because they hinder our efforts in meditation and create all kinds of problems in our daily life as well. Therefore, as countless meditation manuals recognize, learning or realizing them, acknowledging them at the beginning is very critical. Sometimes people introduce just sitting in meditation, but these aspects are very essential because they're, even when we're not sitting meditation or chanting meditation, we can be able to recognize these aspects in our daily life. And as we do that, we can see and effect more positive change in each moment, not just sitting. And again, it's very essential that when we think of the temple or dojo, those aspects are to be brought forth into our daily life where they are deepened. Okay, so it's not just a struggle that we have in our formal practice, but in our daily life. Even though these innate predispositions cause problems, we have them precisely because they are useful to our species and as we have evolved, have helped us in many ways, actually. But the first steps towards working these hindrances skillfully is first to gain some insight or understanding as to the purpose they will ordinarily serve us. Otherwise, we will develop a type of aversion in which we think we must remove them from our bodies, from our minds, which many people try to do that through avoidance, by thinking that if one avoids people that they don't like, they can be happy, or if they don't have to do what they don't like, they can be happy. But actually, as we realize, the activating events, the realities of life, we do not have much control. So therefore, our mental state, our foundation is essential in order to navigate, to understand, and to abide within this life, either in suffering or in liberation. Second, we will cultivate the five meditation factors, which are the remedies, the medicine towards these hindrances, which are directed attention, sustained attention, meditative joy, pleasure/happiness, and unification of mind. Each of these are, in fact, an antidote to one or more of these hindrances, and directs us and contributes towards our goal of meditation by purifying the mind of these facets of our innate biological programming, and because due to our ignorance, their negative influences. Make no mistake, overcoming these hindrances won't deprive you of the ability to survive and care for yourself. In fact, it's just the opposite. We have evolved other abilities such as intelligence and cooperation, which fulfill sometimes and most of the time the same needs, but more effectively and with fewer karmic problems or results. As you stop relying on them, this once useful, but now ineffectual, outdated programming, we will be able to become fully awake, better able to make clear-headed, wise decisions, which allows us to understand and implement skillful means. We can also realize that these hindrances are the basis for the stories and the melodramas that we create in our mind. Some examples of stories rooted in worldly desire, for example, as being the first, these constant keeping up with the Joneses, as they say, I need a beautiful house, I want a successful career so I can be happy. Some other examples of stories rooted in aversion include, I hate rude people. It's not fair. Life should let me be happy. They always get what they want. I don't want to be sick today, or I can't take this place anymore. Examples of stories of laziness and lethargy include, I'm too tired. It's too late. I need more sleep. What a waste of time. And then also examples of the hindrance of agitation due to worry and remorse include, I'm ashamed. What if I get caught behaving in such a way? I'm afraid. There are also self-defeating stories steeped in doubt, such as, I can't meditate. I'm too distracted. I have this or I have that. Too clumsy. Not good enough. These are stories that, you know, largely define our lives that we have created. But in meditation, we can question eventually and move these narratives that, as we know, as the Buddha says, are empty, beyond allowing us to progress. So in the series that I will go through, the five hindrances, you want to familiarize yourself with them and their antidotes, and then become aware of them, learn to recognize them, not only in meditation, as I stated, but in our daily lives. And truly, these efforts will pay off. Because as we become more aware, we can learn how to become the skillful physician, as it talks about in the Lotus Sutra, to administer the medicine, the antidote of enlightenment to ourselves and towards others. This is the way of the Bodhisattva. So thank you very much for joining me today. I hope this is useful, and I look forward to sharing more with you. Namo myoho renge kyo.